Good morning. It's Friday, January 10th, 2014, and it's about 8:05 a.m. and it's Paul. And I'm walking back from school. I dropped the boys off, and we were so close to being on time. We weren't the last ones to get there, but I keep trying. But we haven't walked to school. It's been over 3 weeks. I'm not sure the last day we walked. It may have been Thursday 3 weeks ago. 3 weeks and a day. But we may have driven that day. And then Friday was a snow day. At least four. Anyway, the boys had 3 snow days this week. And yesterday it was too cold to walk. It was 6 below or 7 below. So, finally today, warm enough to walk. I want to tell you a little story. I was reading an article in, I think, Outside magazine. It's about freezing to death. It's about hypothermia. What happens if you try and walk, if your car breaks down and gets stuck, you get lost, you have to walk or ski somewhere, you're not prepared, you get lost in the cold, you slowly freeze to death. At some point you lose your mind, strip off your clothes, you think you're too hot. It's confusion. You pass out. You spend the night in a snowbank. When they find you, your skin is waxy. You look dead. You have like 3 heartbeats per minute. You have extensive frostbite. But you still may be salvageable. It's a great essay. It's written in the first person, and then it goes into like historic events. But you have to be carefully warmed up. They have to do IV infusions of heated saline. They take your temperature rectally with a rectal probe because the rest of you might be so cold there's no way of determining what your temperature is. Blood's not circulating anywhere. But people have been brought back from this state. It happens especially in cases of very cold water drowning, where someone's actually drowned in water freezing or below freezing and been rescued. And I wouldn't say necessarily that you'd have no permanent after effects of this experience, but you might make something akin to a full recovery. Anyway, but there's another issue that goes along with that, which is you have to be warmed carefully. There's a story mentioned in the article, and I'm going to try and look it up. It gives some specifics. It says a Danish or Norwegian fishing boat or something that went down, and the men aboard were rescued from cold water, the North Atlantic, where they had been in the water for an hour and a half or something. They were brought aboard this boat. They walked across the deck. They went into the cabin. 16 men. They went into the cabin for to have a hot drink. I don't know if they got to have their hot drink or not, but they all dropped dead. They were walking. They looked like they had been rescued. It was a glorious moment, and apparently they all just dropped dead. And I think this is, I posted on Facebook, thought for the day, and I quoted this section of this article that describes this. It's called Warming Shock, and it happens when the capillaries, when you're very cold, near dead cold, hypothermic cold, your blood supply to all your extremities shuts down dramatically, like closes off almost. Your body shuts down all that blood flow to save your core, to try and keep you alive, keep your brain and your heart working. And eventually, it'll actually shut down the brain, too, just to keep... It'll shut down. I mean, it won't die, but you'll be unconscious with minimal... You'll be practically comatose. So, if you warm up too fast, all your capillaries open up and your blood pressure drops. Your system can't adjust fast enough, and probably it's like a massive heart attack. Your heart probably tries to pump super fast. Your blood pressure drops to nothing, and you die. And I think that's what happened to these 16 men. I want to find a reference. Anyway, this brings us to why I'm out for a walk this morning without a winter coat. I left my winter coat at home because I don't want to die. It's 30 degrees warmer today for my walk than it was yesterday. Yesterday it was about 6 or 7 below zero. Today it's just below freezing. It's balmy. There is a light breeze. Without the breeze it would be perfect. But I'm not in shorts. I'm not that guy. But I just wore my waffle weave long underwear shirt and my light Columbia fleece, like a long sleeve fleece jacket that's just thin, just fleece, no layers, and jeans, no wool socks, gym socks. Specifically because I wanted to feel enough cold to keep my system from going into shock. I don't want to be that Danish or that Norwegian's that Danish sailor who is rescued from the cold, walks across the deck, sits down with a hot drink, believes his ordeal to be over, and dies. I think there's something to be said for the idea that the whole country is going to be in shock, and the whole country is going to be at risk for for warming shock and maybe also for euphoric hypothermia. Everyone puts shorts on. Because it seems so warm. But it's still cold enough to kill you. If you go outside in shorts and then get stuck in a rainstorm in your cotton. Whatever. Nose is running. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that during this past week, I've managed to avoid getting sick. There's apparently an epidemic of H1N1 raging in Ann Arbor at University Hospital. A bunch of people hospitalized, and a number of them have died. Healthy people who weren't like, we're not talking about 90-year-old men with compromised immune systems or premature babies. I'm talking about healthy adults and children who caught a flu that killed them. They killed them even with access to IV fluids and dialysis and I don't know what they use. Antivirals and all the supportive care that modern medicine is capable of providing. And I hear on Facebook from people who have caught the flu or have caught some other virus, a norovirus, which I already had once this season, something like that. We were giving serious thought to just keeping the kids home for a few more days. I don't remember what date Grace proposed, but it was basically kind of what we did. We couldn't quarantine ourselves completely, but we certainly haven't been out. We didn't go out at all for 3 days. Yesterday, it was starting to warm up finally, and Grace's brothers came over. Her brother Chandler, who was visiting from out of state to meet the new baby. That was nice. We ordered pizza, and we just were running short on things to cook. And we just were falling behind on everything. So I broke down and ordered pizza. And man, do I feel sick from eating chicken wings and pizza instead of, greens and pasta and green smoothies and more like my paleo, semi-paleo diet. Just feel ugh. Which is why the walk is even more important. So here I am, and kids are at school, and I'm taking vitamin D and vitamin C drinks and multivitamin, and the kids are getting vitamin C drinks. Grace won't take her vitamins unless I remind her. We had a sort of a homemade cold remedy that consists of honey, lemon juice, and ginger. And just add hot water to that. It's preserved with a little vodka, but add hot water to that and drink a glass of that. And if I felt my throat starting to be scratchy or feel like a cold is coming on, that's kind of like a, if you get to it early, a couple cups of like hot lemon, honey, and ginger. It seems silly. It really works. Like, it just goes away. It just goes away. But you have to get to it like you first feel that scratching. Today my nose is running because of all the dairy, because I had all this cheese. A lot of phlegm. And my joints and everything are aching because I had soda, even cane sugar soda, and a lot of flour and sugar in the sauce, and I feel blah because all the low quality fats too in the meats and whatnot. And the sauce dip. There's a Papa John's pizza has like a garlic butter sauce that comes with their pizza. And this is one of those indulgences that I hate myself for. So I have to eat one of those. I'll dip a piece of pizza in it and eat the whole thing. If it were real garlic butter, I wouldn't feel so sick afterwards. But it's like, you know, some kind of garlic-flavored margarine concoction with preservatives and blah, blah, blah. Soybean oil. Hydrogenated soybean oil or something. We don't do that very often. I feel I should confess to you. It makes my skin feel disgusting. Anyway, that was the indulgence, and I just hope that it doesn't bring anyone over the edge into immune system is down, and then we get a virus, especially now that the kids are back at school and communing with all the other virus carriers. But it's Friday. It's been a hell of a week. What a difference a day makes. 30 degrees. 30 degrees is a big difference. And we were 30 to 40 degrees below average temperatures. It's been unbelievable. And this isn't even, you know, the coldest part of the country by a long shot. But it was pretty cold. And now we're looking at, I'm so glad it's Friday. The work week was really tedious. Tuesday was very disrupted because I was trying to find and identify the frozen pipe problem. And having the kids home from school, if it were, make a lot of noise. And they're going stir crazy, so they're bickering and fighting. And we can't send them outside. We couldn't, really. Normally, if they were making so much noise, Grace would say, go play out in the yard. Even if it's, you know, snowy, they can make a snowman. If it's a day like today, they could spend an hour outside making a snowman. But when it's 10 below zero, they're not going to be, they might, if you bundle them up enough, they might be safe, but they're going to be miserable. And it's even hard to get them safe. keep all their like little fingers and toes from frostbite. And it's that cold. I wasn't going out for anything more than a brief walk. There's a piece of luggage someone has left with the trash. It's like a rolling suitcase. And it doesn't look damaged. It doesn't look damaged or ruined. I wonder if it got wet. I bet it got wet. Like it was soaked in a pipe burst or something. I wonder if that's why it's out there. But I'm looking at it, wondering if I should take it. Maybe I'll inspect it on the next pass. Stuff is usually left out for a reason. And you look at it and you're like, oh, that's really not salvageable. It's like this enormous TV I saw sitting out on the curb with the trash. I thought, wow, that's a tube TV. It's an old tube TV, not a flat screen. And much bigger than our 20-inch Sony. I thought, wow, we could replace our TV with that. But I looked at it closely and it looked like a fraternity had owned it or something. It was all damaged and had no power cord, and I couldn't figure out where it had even been pulled out, where it even went in. It's very strange. There's a big box sitting out. So people put their trash out, and trash pickup was pretty much canceled for the week. Maybe it's back today, but I don't think so. And these bags have been torn open by skunks or raccoons or whatever. There was no trash pickup Monday or Tuesday. And what it said was, we just have to wait a week. And because we're coming off Christmas and New Year's, where we produce more food trash and packaging trash than usual, our trash is overflowing. Pizza boxes now, and 2 weeks worth of recycling. Oh, I feel terrible for the amount of waste we produce. I'm not quite sure. Like, we're really good about not wasting food itself. Like, stuff gets reused. Leftovers from anything. When we do have to actually throw food out, I feel terribly guilty. And mostly we don't. Like, the chicken bones go into, the chicken carcass goes into the slow cooker, the chicken bones, even from the wings we got last night from the pizza place. Everyone saved their bones from the wings, and those will go into the slow cooker. They're all in the fridge waiting to make broth, and Grace will cook them until they disintegrate, just so that broth has all that calcium and whatever protein and fat and gelatin is in the chicken. Even though, you know, it's not the best chicken, but we'll use it. It'll turn into soup or go into something else or go into mashed potatoes or... Oops, slippery. But, even recycling all our cans, we're using way too many cans. Even recycling all our cardboard, we're using way too much cardboard. We mail ordered a box from Bob's Red Mill, because the Bob's Red Mill stuff we were getting here was too old. It needs to be fresh ground flour. People don't really like gold medal flour. Doesn't have anything in it to go bad, so it sits forever. and doesn't get any worse. It's practically shelf stable, but like ground flax seed or cornmeal or whatever, anything whole grain ground, it has a shelf life. It has a short shelf life. Really, it should be refrigerated. So you can grind your own grains, which we keep talking about doing but haven't done, or try and, you know, order stuff and get it quickly and keep it in the fridge. So we ordered a big box of stuff from Bob's Red Mill. Whole grain, like your thick cut oatmeal, which is really good. And a bunch of gluten-free baking supplies, hazelnut flour, black bean flour. I think there's some teff flour in there. Maybe some rice flour. And what else? Some xanthan gum. That doesn't need to be refrigerated. That's, xanthan gum is like the missing piece. Missing link in gluten-free baking. It basically replaces the gluten. Snowplow, that's weird. We haven't seen very many of those. But I've never heard of anyone being like xanthan gum intolerant, but I guess that could happen. But it helps bind things together. So it makes, like, it gives your bread a crust. You know, it makes it not, makes the particles of flour. Basically, it seems to make your gluten-free bread and muffins not have the texture of sand, not taste gritty. So anyway, we don't do that many carbs. We eat so little bread and carbs that Pippin yesterday was asking for some bread that Grace had made, some gluten-free bread, and she bakes bread so rarely that he didn't know the word for it. We're kind of proud of that, actually. They do eat corn tortillas. But I try to eat low on the carbs. And if I do eat carbs, it's like a whole rolled oats, you know, something like that. Or steel cut oats. Okay. Can I do 3 laps? Gonna try. I kind of lost track. I crossed the street at one point. I may have changed direction. I kind of lost track of where I am. I need this exercise. It was torment to not be able to get out and walk for a few days. It was just too cold. Even 6 below yesterday. It was pretty cold. But it had been colder than that the previous few mornings. I don't know what the low was for the whole polar vortex assault. think it may have been, I don't think it reached 20 below the air temperature, not the wind chill. I think it might have reached 18 below. And it certainly reached 12 or 13 below. I'll have to look that up. Wonderground.com is down, or was down. Not sure what's up with it. The weather forecasts have been really odd, like yesterday's forecast said that the high and low yesterday would be exactly the same, would be 18 degrees, but it was 6 below zero at 8 o'clock in the morning, so I don't understand there. What do they consider a day? And I don't think there's ever been a day when the temperature stayed. I guess it could happen in just the right freakish conditions, but where the temperature stayed a single temperature all day as the sun got higher in the sky and as it got lower and then as night set in, it stayed exactly the same temperature. That doesn't make any sense, so how could that be the prediction? I don't think that's ever happened. And then they were reporting temperatures that were 10 degrees off from what was actually happening. So, I don't know, I posted on Facebook, go home, wonderground.com, you're drunk. And then it went down, so maybe someone noticed the problem. I wonder if it was just NOAA data that was bad. If they're just passing on someone, like some forecast numbers that are provided elsewhere. Not really sure about how that works. Anyway, I hesitate to have another hot drink when I go inside because I fear the Danish sailor syndrome. But maybe I can manage. Maybe if I warm up gradually, I'll take my coat off so I'm not too warm. I've been wearing all these layers and indoors and hats indoors because it's been 55 indoors, even with the heat running flat out. The house is masonry, it takes a long time to adjust. So it's just now, even though it was warming up yesterday, last night the house was still really cold. But this morning it feels balmy. It's all because it's back up to, like it's caught up, it's back up to 63 where we have the thermostat set, and it feels balmy. And I didn't leave the water running slightly all night to keep the pipes from freezing. So, what's next? Tomorrow, so it's like 26 or even might be up to 30 now. It's supposed to get above freezing, I think, today. But then Saturday, they're predicting 40 and maybe rain. And that's actually a little worrying because there's 2 feet of snow, there's 3 feet of snow some places, and of course where it's drifted or been plowed up, there's, you know, 5 feet of snow on the ground here. And if that all melts really fast, this neighborhood will be a lake, and Saginaw's stormwater system will be. I can't even imagine. Overflowing. Sewage overflowing, you know. Water treatment plant flooded. I don't know. I don't know what all happens. But warming up too quickly could kill you. Certainly could be a bad thing, warming too quickly. I think I'm walking past the only house on the block that's insulated more poorly than ours is. Their roof is completely free of snow, and they just have massive, massive icicles hanging down. I'm gonna end. I wish I had something pithy to say. The transition to getting up at 5:30 again, trying to get the kids to bed by 9 or 8, that, and then waking them up at 7, that transition has been hard, especially to do it midweek. And we, you know, try to get them adjusted to get them going to bed sooner, but it's very hard. And then yesterday they all did something which was kind of nice but kind of terrifying, which was around 5 o'clock or so, or 6 o'clock even, they were all down for a nap. And I saw this, and I'm like, oh, thank God it's quiet. But also thinking, oh, shit, they're going to take a 90-minute nap, and then when it's time to go to bed at, in three more, or two or three more hours after we feed them, that's going to be crazy. They're going to be crazy. And they were cray-cray. And so barely got them down by 11. Didn't help that their uncles were visiting. And then, of course, waking them up at 7. That was an existential assault to Sam. That was an insult. That was pissing on everything he holds most dear. That was a, this doesn't make any sense. Dad, this doesn't make any sense. How does this make sense? How does this even make sense? How can this even happen? Why do you do this? This is not right. Why does school exist? Is there no God? Sam's the free thinker. He's been saying interesting things. He doesn't believe in God. He believes in darkness. Or he doesn't not believe in God, but he believes in darkness. It's kind of a, he's mine, definitely. It's definitely mine. Believes in spirits, but he doesn't believe in God. A little more. I got some books at the, there's a used bookstore at a little, how can two cars on an otherwise completely deserted street with clearly marked signs nearly hit each other? It always baffles me. There's a stop sign here, clearly, and this other guy clearly has the right of way, and there's not another car in sight. It's not sunny, but it's clear and the sun is up. Anyway, I almost witnessed one of the stupidest accidents I've ever seen. I just went through the stop. Didn't look to see the oncoming cars. I wonder, it might have been because the snow down the middle of the boulevard is piled so high that he couldn't get a good view from that angle. I'm not sure. I'm going with my unbelievable stupidity theory. Maybe he's texting. Books. I gotta go back to that place. They have some great stuff. It's full of romance novels and junk. But there's a back room where they have something that, some stuff that, you know, well, it's also kind of junk, but to me it's special junk. I think it looks like some specific person's complete collection. And maybe the owner, not sure. But it looks like some specific person's complete collection of book club editions from the science fiction book club from the 80s. And it's just, I'm touching these books and looking at the cover, and I'm just, suddenly it's 30 years ago. And I'm 16 again. Because I subscribed to the science fiction book club, and I paid with my wages from working at a grocery store for these books, which were cheap editions. I think, you know, they would typically cost like $4.99 for a hardcover. I don't remember for sure, but they were cheaper. And they're not, you know, they're not gorgeous editions. They're not well made, but man, they're nostalgic. So I had to take some home that I had, that I'm pretty certain that I owned. And I'm rereading some of them. Some of the science fiction of the 80s. The one I read so far is Greg Bear's novel, Eon. Greg Bear wrote Blood Music and Eon and Eternity and Forge of God and Anvil of Stars, and has a more recent, I've missed some of his stuff, has a more recent thing called Whole X, I think it's called Whole X Zero or something like that. I think he writes Slant. Anyway, I've read a number of these. Queen of Angels, I think. I've read a number of these. I remember him as being a little better writer than he is. Eon is interesting. It's kind of like Rendezvous with Rama. I'd say inspired by Rendezvous with Rama. It has a real Cold War theme, a nuclear Armageddon theme. And it's interesting to go back to put on that mindset again, where there's an Eastern Bloc and there's mutual assured destruction and disarmament and tridents and Minutemen and you know, it's 2 minutes to midnight and and people are running war games like scenarios. it actually takes place in the past. I think the events of the book take place around 2004, so around 10 years ago. So it was written about 1984, so it was only set about 20 years in the future. The idea was that there an asteroid, this is contains spoilers, an asteroid arrives in Earth orbit. You call it spoilers for a book that came out 30 years ago. It's called variously the potato or the thistle down. It's an asteroid that's clearly been modified. It's been hollowed out. It's been turned into a spacecraft, like a generational ship. It has cities built into it, and like a star drive, and some advanced technology beyond what Bear was predicting for 2004. And so there's an international consortium of people exploring it, and a fight for access to it. And the Americans are kind of de facto in charge, even though there's also China sent scientists and Russia sent scientists. It's the Soviet Union back when it was the Soviet Union. So it's a lot of Cold War tension. The protagonist is interesting. She's a Hispanic woman named Patricia Vasquez, I think, who is a brilliant mathematician. And it's like a lot of science fiction from the 80s, it's refreshingly unsexist still, in the way that it portrays a female character. She reminds me a little bit of Shirako Jones in John Varley's Gaia trilogy. There's still some subtleties going on. She's about her sort of diminutive person and whatnot, but it's very it's ahead of its time as far as portrayal of a female protagonist. She is actually engaged. She's the career half of the, like the exploring half of the duo, though, which is interesting. She leaves her fiance on Earth and goes off to this mission, and she doesn't know what she's getting into. So this is a spoiler part. There are these chambers built into this asteroid, and they have cities, and it's been terraformed. There's a library. There's two big secrets. I will reveal them to you now. The first big secret, well, three, there's sort of three. The first big secret is that this rock was altered and set up and launched, retrofitted and everything, by humans from the future. Patricia Vasquez finds in the library, she finds her own papers, her own mathematical papers from the future. So that's the first big secret, which is that the technology and the culture and everything that these people are exploring is the human futures, technology and culture. The second secret is that I think there are 7 chambers in the asteroid, and some are terraformed like as forest, and you know, left as kind of wilderness. Some of them contain equipment like the drive, the star drive. Some of them contain the cities. Some of it's like docking bays and equipment and whatnot. But the 7th chamber, when they go through the door into the 7th chamber, it contains a bit of a surprise, which is that it doesn't end. They don't run into the end cap. They don't run into the end of the asteroid, as they'd expect. It keeps going. So it's kind of like the TARDIS, in that it's bigger on the inside. And not only does it keep going, but it keeps going possibly forever. And it turns out that this has been created, this has been manufactured using some mumbo-jumbo technology to change space-time. I'm going to walk around the block, go down Court Street. Mumbo-jumbo technology to change space-time. And it creates something called the flaw, which is like an axis that begins just past the asteroid and runs down the middle of this endless chamber, this endless tunnel. And it has interesting physics. You can grip onto it, and when you squeeze it, it, like with a clamp, it displaces you. So you can travel along it just by applying pressure, squeezing it. It displaces. It's like the right-hand rule in physics. You apply force in one direction and it pushes you in the other direction. And along this passage, it is possible to open gates into other universes. Okay, so those are the two big secrets. The sort of the lesser secret is that this is from the human future, the future of the people exploring the Thistledown, exploring the asteroid. But it's an alternate future. It's a slightly different timeline. It's an alternate universe. So the asteroid was, when they turned on this equipment that opened up this rift that made the 7th chamber open up and go on forever through space-time, there was like a whiplash effect, and the asteroid was moved from its universe into ours. Anyway, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So, not as good as I remembered. I remember it. I love the ideas. It's a novel of ideas. That's what science fiction is. Books about ideas. And it's pretty brilliant. I like it better than Rendezvous with Rama. I know that might be heresy. It's a little less mannered. It's a little more gonzo. I like the main character. I like the premise. I like some of the world building. It's just that I think the Cold War setting seems less relevant. And the way he establishes sort of parallel fighting factions between the people that inhabit the Way, which is the tunnel through space-time. It's very clever, occasionally very funny and interesting, but I don't know, I'm not sure what the word to use is. A little too precious. A little too set up. A little too convincingly a recapitulation of the Cold War going on between the humans, between the present day humans visiting the asteroid. I don't know, it's kind of I find it a little unconvincing. So I'm walking down Court where the sidewalk should be, and a lot of people haven't shoveled at all. So this is kind of an ugly way to go. Makes me pissed at our mail carrier though. Like, we've shoveled, we've cleared, and the snow drifts a little bit, but it's still much more passable than this, and she's knocking on the door constantly saying, "You need to clear your sidewalk." Like, not only did I pay a kid to do it, I did it again, and Grace did it again, and yet, you know, it's drifted a little, and so there's a little snow. "You need to clear your sidewalk." Anyway, Eon, Greg Bear, recommend it. Not quite as good as I remember. The ending seems to come too soon. It seems a little anticlimactic. It seems like maybe he's... could have been longer without getting boring. Maybe he's doing a little too much to set up the sequel. Because the sequel is in my pile next. They had both books. I probably read them back to back back then. Eon and Eternity. Now, this is... I may be wrong. This is what I remember about Greg Bear. Greg Bear has a number of books in pairs. Eon, Eternity, Forge of God, Hammer of Stars, two. Queen of Angels and Slant, I think. I forget which one comes first. To my recollection, and this may be wrong, I think I've read all those three sets where there's a book and a sequel. And to my recollection, in each case, the first one is much better. And I get the feeling, and this may not be true at all, and if not, I apologize to Greg Bear, but I get the feeling that He wrote the first one on his own time, like on spec, and then shopped it to a publisher, secured a publisher for it, and then got a deal for the sequel, like to get paid to write the sequel. And I'm not sure why this would be, but maybe because he was so broke, then wrote the sequels faster or sloppier or with less inspiration in some way. And so in all those cases, the sequels are worse. Now, that's not to say I don't think writers should get paid. It's unfortunate. However it came about, writers should get paid. They should be able to... Writers of his caliber should be able to earn a living writing and practice at it and write enough novels that they reach a point where their novels are just transcendently good. Anyway, maybe it's Hole 03. I read recently, and I was expecting it to be transcendently good because Greg Bear's had a lot of time to work on his books. But it wasn't. It was a really fascinating premise, but it felt recycled from Frank Herbert and other books who have written about, like, the living starship paradigm, and the way he hid information and it gradually came out through an unreliable first-person narrator. I don't know, it didn't work for me. It didn't work. It didn't come off as dramatic. So I'm disappointed in that too. I feel like if I'd read it when I was 16, I would have loved it. And I hope that's not the lesson that I'm learning, but it may be. And if so, it's going to be a bit of a sad lesson, which is, because I've picked up several other books, Nebula Award winners and whatnot. Fred Pohl, other books that I read at 16 as I was really diving into science fiction. I mean, I had been reading it for a few years, but it was really plowing through novels, plowing through books. Maybe the lesson is that none of these, or almost none of them, are as good as I remember. And I remember them as good because they were new. And I was new. And the ideas seemed fresh and new to me, even though there are really no new ideas. Even in science fiction. Or not many. And so, maybe you're just bound to appreciate more the book by whoever got to that idea first. And that science fiction has a sell-by date. If it's too tied to the present, because it's always about the present. If it's a little too tied to the current real political situation, it has a sell-by date. And I guess it's the rare book of any genre that can really transcend its sell-by date and paradoxically It seems like the best way for a book to do that is maybe to be really, really about its time. Even more. More detailed, more stuck in the more constructed of hard, real detail that's convincing. Also, from that used bookstore, a book I've never read, John Dos Passos' USA trilogy. I just barely started it. It looks to me like an American Ulysses. It's really fascinating. So I want to see where that goes. It's a big book. The edition I found is really cool. It's like a cloth bound, like it's a paperback with a soft cloth cover. It's really cool. I have to see if I can find any more books bound like that. It's very nice to hold in your hand, and it looks like it's wrapped in a torn up American flag, like the cover was recycled from an American flag colors. Okay, I'm back to my front door. I'm going to turn this off. We'll see if any of this is worth saving. But I am so grateful. So grateful. There's no staff meeting this morning, so I'm not missing it. But I do need to get to my desk. But again, what a difference a day makes. I hope that you have gotten through the polar vortex and that you don't suffer from warming shock. And that none of us do, and that we can get back to something resembling a normal, stable winter and get through this. I'm living in terror of our heating bill. But anyway, I fear we won't get back to anything stable. But there it is. Take care all. Bye-bye.